Campus FM presents Talking Heads Season 3, brought to you by students of the International Master in Adult Education for Social Change.
In the 21st century, barriers are being broken, people all around the globe are becoming ever more interconnected. The need for mutual means of communication never felt more real. English has emerged to fill that role. What are the consequences of this phenomenon? In today's episode, we're going to be talking about the language of English, the benefits and difficulties that it brings to users and non-users, as well as the impact that it has on us, the way that we think and act even when we're not necessarily aware of them. My name is Ngoc from Vietnam, and I'm going to be your host for the day. Together with me in the studio today are my colleagues from the third cohort of the IMAS program, Abby, Solace, Jewel, Catherine, and Anna. Friends, why don't you say hi to our listeners?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Hi.
Thank you everyone for agreeing to be on the show with me today, otherwise be very lonely. All right, let's just dive into the topic, I guess. Let's start with an easy one, right? So the topic of the day today is the language of English and its impact on us as users. What, in your opinion, are the benefits of English as a global language?
I'll start. I think the most obvious one is ease of communication, because when you have one language that a lot of people speak, it's easier to communicate in different ways. I mean, communication comes in all forms, and it's easier to interact, it's easier to do business, it's easier to do a whole lot of things because you speak one language, you understand each other.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, we wouldn't be here if we didn't all speak English. I mean,
yeah,
we are from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different countries. Without English, we wouldn't have the chance to, you know, talk to each other.
True.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Abby?
Well, it's easier because otherwise you have to learn like a lot of languages, like instead of just one. And you can, as my partner said, like communicate with people from all around the world, well, people who know English. So it's easier to have like a communication and to get like more information and to do networking and everything with just one language.
Right. So yeah, obviously, I suppose there's a lot of benefits to having English as a common language, I guess. We can all communicate. Anna, what do you think?
Yeah, actually, being an English language teacher, I can say that globalization is an inevitable process. But I personally think that there is some kind of a threat, because just recent studies showed that we have around 6,000 languages in the world. 3,000 are going to die by the end of this century. Yeah.
Not surprising.
So can you imagine that every 2 weeks there is one language dying out somewhere?
Wow.
And you can imagine that if the language dies, we seriously lose some inherited knowledge of some culture. So there should be some balance between keeping English as the language of global communication and keeping some indigenous languages all over the world.
I'm very glad, like Anna has touched on some statistics, because currently in Ghana there's a debate going on. Ghana, in case you didn't know, our national language is English. We were colonized by the British and we never went back in terms of language. We do have over 200 local languages though, but we have one major one that at least 50% of the entire population speaks. That's Chi, and unfortunately, when it comes to English, it's more of an education thing. Even though it's a national language, you're more likely to be able to speak and understand it if you've been to school. Now, if you have a population where you have like an illiteracy level of about 46-50%, then you're looking at like that percentage of people being considered illiterate because they don't speak English because it's taught in school. And so you have a bigger problem on your hands, because then you have like a larger population being considered illiterates because they don't speak a particular language that is a national language that is supposed to be accessible to all, but only accessible through education.
Mm-hmm.
And so like people are thinking, oh, maybe our Chi, our Ga, all the other ethnic indigenous languages should also probably be brought up to the standard and accepted as easily as English has been. However, the question is, Chi does not go beyond Ghana.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the same case for a lot of, I guess, indigenous languages.
Mm, okay.
Jewel, in your opinion, what are some other cons, I suppose, to having English as a common language globally. What is the situation like in China right now?
I think the greatest thing to speak one language is, you know, you can change ideas because you know the language. Just like TED Talks, you know, you can change ideas. But if you don't speak English, it's like the challenge. And just like academics, if you can speak English, you can write English, and you can read mm-hmm. English like articles. It's very good to know what's going on, you know, in other countries in this particular field. But if you don't, it will be a very big challenge for you to develop in your own field. So mm-hmm. I think this is like the biggest challenge for academic.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm, I see. But English is not a national language in China, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, no, yeah.
Yeah. So what is it like English education in China right now? I suppose it's not on the same level as it is in Ghana.
Yeah, I think actually we learn English like from very early stage in our lives. Like nowadays in China, English are like the required course for primary school, even at their grade one. Yeah, it's a required
wow.
course, yeah.
Wow.
Yes. And at my time, and I learned English like at my grade 5, and then it moved to grade 3, and now it's grade 1 in primary school. Yeah.
How old are kids in grade 1?
I think it's 6 or 7, wow. yeah. Mm. But actually more like children from wealthy family, they will learn English from their kindergarten. Mm-hmm. Just mm-hmm. like my niece, she is like only 4 something, yeah. Mm. And she started learning English with her inner, like, bilingual mm-hmm. kindergarten. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ah. I think that is such an important point, yeah. that yeah. English will, in the end, reinforce yeah. inequalities. I mean, people who grow up with English or have the chance to learn it early, they will always have better chances of being successful internationally.
Yeah, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, you're sort of set up for that successful path in a way, right?
Mm-hmm.
But just curious, I'm just thinking, would studying English at such a young age interfere with the ability to develop one's local language abilities?
No, necessarily.
I'm just thinking out loud right here. Because for me personally, the more that I learn and speak and use English, it feels to me, unfortunately, that I'm losing my Vietnamese.
Mm.
You know, in a lot of ways, I'm forgetting vocabularies, I'm forgetting sometimes expressions. So to me, it seems like a balancing game, you know, like a balancing act all the time. I don't know if it feels the same to you.
Coming from like a background that with English, as like I said, as a national language, definitely this has also been an issue. There's been a lot of talk about how a lot of children, especially those who go to school, like in the formal system, don't speak their local language. They have even parents who ban their children from speaking a local language because it's not prestigious enough. So it's all a matter of perception, like an elitist point of view when it comes to English and what it stands for, what it represents. However, for instance, I started speaking my local language when I was 11. It was a conscious effort on the part of my parents because the thing is, at the end of the day, in as much as we want to keep our local language and promote it and all that, English is what runs the country.
Mm, okay.
So, yeah, actually, for me, it's not an issue because I can face this problem when I spend too much time abroad, mm-hmm. that I start kind of forgetting my own language. But as soon as I'm back to Russia, it's so easy for me to get my language again. Mm-hmm. And I think that learners can adapt to a new learning and language environment quite easily. So you just need to switch from one language to another. That's mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, I think it's like it depends on how often you speak the language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the environment that you're in.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Do you face the same issue, Abby?
I don't have like a lot of time speaking English, so I think that for me it's easier like to remember my Spanish. But I have noticed now like I have like 8 months speaking just like English mostly. So I start like to switch words. For example, I'm saying like a phrase in Spanish and then mm-hmm. I don't remember a word and I put it yeah. in English instead of in Spanish. Mm-hmm. So I'm speaking in Spanglish.
Uh-huh.
With my family.
Yeah.
But I think that it's also because my brain is just like going as crazy. I think that it's easier for people who learn like English really in a really like young stage,
mm-hmm.
like to do this, I don't know, like to separate the languages and to speak like really clearly in both of them.
Yeah,
I don't know if I'm
I think
right
so
or,
too from like yeah. I mean my undergrad is a few years ago now, but I study psychology and we also talked mm-hmm. about this kind of thing like with children and developmental psychology, and it is actually beneficial mm-hmm. for kids in some ways to learn more than one language very early because the brain is still very flexible, so it's much less harder for them to learn it when they're young than when they're old, of course. Like, you know how hard it is. And studies have even shown that if you speak more than one language, it can improve your decision making in moral dilemmas, because sometimes we attach emotions to words in our language that we speak, but if you speak several languages, this emotional content that can sometimes hinder rational decisions will be less, because you can see it from different perspectives and maybe even different cultural perspectives.
Right. Can I ask a question? Which language do you guys think in?
Oof.
Both.
It's like three different languages at the same time.
Right. Which language are you thinking in?
Like right now, I would be thinking English because I speak English, but I don't know. It kind of depends who you talk to. Yeah. Like yesterday, I was meeting with Abby. We were speaking Spanish. I was trying to get my Spanish back on because it's very rusty. And then after, when I walked home, I was literally thinking in Spanish, and I was like, oh, it's still there.
Yeah, if I listen, for example, a song in Spanish, then I start to think in Spanish, and then I switch like to English, and then I start to think in English. So it depends, like, in the mood.
Just wanted to know.
Yeah. How about you, Jay?
I think, yeah, just as you, depends on who are speaking to. Yeah.
All right. So we're going to go on a short break, and then after the break, we'll be talking more about the standardizing of the English language.
This is Talking Eds Season 3, brought to you by the third cohort of the International Master in Adult Education for Social Change.
Welcome back after the break. Before the break, we talked about the language of English as a global language and its advantages and the disadvantages that it brings. And now I sort of want to dive a little deeper into the standardizing process of the English command. Anna, so it might sound like a silly question, but what do you think is the point of having standardized language tests, English in specific?
Well, I think that now it is becoming crucially important to get this international certification, because if you hold a TEFL certification, you are highly qualified for a teaching position abroad. And if you want to teach in a foreign country and including EU countries, that is typically required in all language schools and institutions. And it seems to me that this certification opens up job opportunities for those with a certificate who may not be really good enough in teaching, but closes the doors in front of experienced and talented teachers without a certificate. So I personally faced this requirement while applying for a number of vacancies abroad, including China, Malta, and some other countries. Still, a number of schools accepted my qualifications and another language certificate, which I have, but their percentage was very low. And I can say that it can become a real problem for those who cannot afford this certification. Yeah, but to do justice to these tests, TEFL or CELTA, I think they still are quite useful, especially for non-experienced teachers, as they can really give you knowledge about teaching skills and techniques.
Jewel, I know that you are also teaching English to students in China, right? But what is your perspective on it? What are the pros and cons? Like, there must be benefit to having a standardized teaching, I guess, certificate, right?
Actually, I have the certificate for teaching and high school students English. I got that certificate, but it's from the Chinese nation. You know, it's not an international one, but because I majored in English teaching, so I got that certificate. And mainly in China, if you want to teach students English, if you're from abroad, you'd better, just like Anna mentioned, you'd better hold a certificate of, like TEFL or TESOL, like teaching English as a second language or foreign language, that certificate, yes. But actually, I think before, any like white guy or, you know, any foreign person who can speak very good English, they can be a teacher. They can be hired as a teacher in like learning centers if only they like speak very good English. But I think even they can speak very good English, it doesn't mean that they know how to teach actually. So I do think the certificate for teaching is really necessary. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Because you want to ensure the quality of the teachers,
yes,
right?
Yes, indeed.
Because, for example, in Vietnam, the English teaching industry is on the rise, and a lot of language centers are hiring. There's a very big demand for English teachers from abroad, because people from abroad are seen, in a way, as superiors in their language command, even when it's not necessarily the case. So a lot of language centers would, you know, based on that prejudice and hire people without qualifications, people who are not qualified, people who don't even have a good command in English. So I see the point that Anna made, you know, these tests may hinder the performance of many good teachers because they're not allowed to teach without a certificate. But then at the same time, we must ensure the qualities of the teachers that we have in our schools, in our centers, right? What is your take on it, Kevin?
I just think that it's important to acknowledge prior knowledge and prior experience. Like, if someone can prove that they have been teaching successfully for a long time, I think it shouldn't be necessary for them to show a certificate. I think the problem is that, especially, like, exactly the seeing people as superior, mm-hmm. that is the big problem. That is what causes the trouble here. Mm-hmm. I think it's good to have a certificate, but if you don't have one, you should be able to teach. But you shouldn't just be able to teach only because your English is good or only because you look like your English is good. I think that's the colonializing power of English.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Yeah. I suppose the ability to teach or the capability to teach should be determined best in, I guess, interviews or in-person selection process or in a way.
Yeah. I agree to an extent, and I say this because I recently just enrolled in like a TEFL class, and as I've already established, I have been like speaking English since I was a child. That's the only language, international language I know. I'm also a journalist, which means I use it in like more professionally than most. But then when I went through some of the course materials for like the teaching aspect, it was the part that really, you know, hit me was the technique part. Because at the end of the day, those things are extremely important. It's one thing saying, I speak really well, I can write a really good essay, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but will I be able to teach you how to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Do I remember what most of the grammar I know it's in my head, I can construct sentences perfectly. But if you ask me specific questions, I learned most of those stuff like in primary school and junior high school. I can't remember most of them. Because I faced that problem in Glasgow when I taught English at the one community center. I was like, okay, now I have to explain this. I haven't explained this in like 10 years. I don't remember what it means, but I know it's correct. Like, so I had to do a lot of reading, and then I understood why you need to go through that process again.
Mm-hmm.
And what one thing very briefly that my TEFL teacher said was, for native English speakers, it's more difficult for you to remember those things as opposed to someone who learned mm-hmm. English as a second language. They can tell you, oh, this is a phrase, this is an adverbial phrase, conjunction, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I have a lot of students learning English from abroad, and they also, it's very interesting that they will come back to China and they learn English from Chinese teacher. The reason is that they think that the way the Chinese teacher teach English is like different from the way the native speaker teach. I don't know. It's like the language thing, like
just the way that they explain.
Yeah, the way
the
they explain is different. And I try to like teach grammar in their thinking mode to teach grammar. And it's a little bit difficult for them to accept that because they are so used to the Chinese version of teaching grammar, like learning grammar from Chinese teachers, because it's like a different thinking mode.
Mm-hmm. I want to draw it back a little bit and focus on the learning aspect. Abby, when you learned English, did you face a lot of difficulties in trying to acquire a standardized test result?
Yes, well, I have tried like to learn English since I was in high school. But I start with just like basic classes in high school that were free and everything, because in Mexico it's like really hard to learn English. You have to be like a family of a migrant who was like, I don't know, like deported to Mexico in order to get like the English, or you have to have like a lot of money to get private like classes and everything. Because in public schools it's really poor. I mean, you just learn the verb to be and the pronouns. I think that in 3 years, that's the only thing that I learned.
Okay.
And then I start university and I got a scholarship and I start like with English classes. And they were just like 3 times per week and 2 hours each day. And they are really basic, like Oh, again, you start with pronouns, birth we, and then I think that you finish 11 levels. It mm-hmm. was just like 3 years or something. Mm-hmm. And you can communicate, but that's all. Mm-hmm. So you have to start learning by yourself and everything in order to get a certificate. The first certificate that I got was for these 11 levels. And then I try in Mexico, we have like two TOEFL versions. One is the local one to be studying in Mexico, because if you want to enroll in a degree, you have to have certain English level. But if you want to go abroad, you need like the TOEFL IBT. And I tried it like once, and it was really bad. It was really, really bad. I mean, I bought like all the guides. It's really expensive, mm-hmm. and they sell you like a lot of things. Mm-hmm. They tell you like, oh yeah, you are going to get like the score if you do this, this, and this. So I bought everything, mm-hmm. and I did it, and I didn't get it. Mm-hmm. So it was really hard, because the TOEFL IBT is really, really, really special. Like, it's really specific in vocabulary.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
I mean, the vocabulary, it's the most important thing of that test. Mm-hmm. And it's vocabulary that I don't even know, like, in Spanish. Mm-hmm. For example, there are things about geology or mm-hmm. biology, and I'm an educator. I'm not a scientific, so mm-hmm. it's, like, really complicated.
Yeah.
Then the second time I try, like, to focus more on the format of the test, because it's really hard. I mean, you have to memorize a lot of things, because you have like for example, the audio first, and then you have the questions. So you have to remember all the things that the audio says, like 5 minutes of just like being listening and everything, and then answer the questions. So I tried to familiarize me more like with the format of the test, and I got like a better like a score. I didn't get it like the 90 points that I needed, but I got like 88. So it was almost there. And then I have to pay again, but this time I decided like to change, because it was the third time and I was like with a lot of stress, without money, so it was my last chance. And I did the IELTS, mm-hmm. and the IELTS was quite different. I think that it's a little bit better than the TOEFL, because it's more like for daily situations, and in academic it's like more broad. It's not that specific.
So it depends a lot on the format of the test as well, because I think other tests don't have such a strong emphasis on vocabulary, like the TOEFL IBT, like the IELTS, for example. I think the focus is more on coherence or grammar and
grammar
and things like that.
Phonics. Yeah. Phonics.
And I think it does emphasize a little bit on the clarity, like how clearly you
clarity
speak.
Of voice.
Clarity of voice. Not so much the accents, I suppose.
Yeah, more like
but the clarity of voice, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But in the learning process, it seems to me like there is a tendency to favor, again, good accents. Mm-hmm. Like,
what is a good accent?
But again, what are good accents? Like, American accent, the American accent of British, or Australian, New Zealand. I don't know. There are too many to name. So how do you think we can combat this phenomenon where people favor certain accents when they learn English?
Just judging on my learning experience, having studied in a traditional higher education institution, I was supposed to learn the so-called, you know, received pronunciation accent, which is considered to be kind of an intellectual accent. And, well, actually, that is how we were taught. But then, once I had my internship in the USA, I faced huge difficulties trying to recognize American accents. Mm-hmm. And it was so funny, because I was an experienced, almost like graduate, and I couldn't really recognize any word, any single word. And it took me some time to get used to their American accents.
Okay. But how do we combat this? Catherine?
That is such a difficult question. Mm-hmm. I mean, I acquired an accent myself because mm-hmm. I didn't want to sound German. I don't want to sound German because it doesn't sound pretty. So, I don't know, but that's so fascinating to me. I think that to combat this, we would need to value our own language and our own culture more. If I valued more that I was German, and if I saw more the benefits of it, I probably wouldn't mind the accent as much. But as it's like, if your English is perfect, that's great and it'll open you doors. And we should get away from defining perfect English as an English that is perfect in pronunciation and in grammar, towards an English that is perfect in giving you the ability to really express what you want to say.
Clarity.
Yeah. Clarity of thought instead of clarity of voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Valuing our own languages and cultures, Solace, how do we do this through education?
It's very tricky. Unfortunately, I come from an environment where It's education is more utilitarian. It's more of what it's going to get you. In the same way with language, it's like, what can I get with this if I speak Chi, if I speak Ga, if I speak Efe, or any of the other local languages? If it's something that I hold dear, where is it going to get me, as opposed to if I was speaking English, what is it going to do for me? I can be a lawyer, doctor, journalist, what not, with English. Okay, well, also with a journalist, yes, we have local languages as well, but it's more prestigious to be an English journalist as opposed to a local language journalist. They're more respected, they have more international awards, they're more, you know, recognized internationally. And so it's more of, so long as the value for English remains the same, it's prestigious, it's superior, it's all these things that people naturally want to aspire to, it will be really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so long as English remains that which sort of will kind of like help you put food on your table, mm-hmm. it's almost impossible. However, with education, the education system, especially in Ghana, for instance, it's still English driven. So how do you use that same system that is promoting one major language to change a perception about mm-hmm. that same language?
Mm-hmm.
That is, I don't know how that's going to happen. I can't say I know the answer, but it's more of like a socialization thing, going back to the roots of respecting what we already had, not throwing mm-hmm. away English and saying, no, it's bad, no, mm-hmm. but embracing it and then working hand in hand with the indigenous languages as well, making them as important so people don't feel like it's not, I mean, it won't take me anywhere.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's about the question, is it valuable enough to exactly. try to make the impossible possible? So again, we're not trying to offer any answers, but rather posing questions for all of us to think about, and maybe for our listeners as well. Well, I think that's the end of the session for today. Thank you so much, friends, for being here with me in the studio. That was such a fascinating discussion.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in today. If you are interested in finding more about the International Master in Adult Education for Social Change, aka the IMASC, please go to www.gla.ac.uk. And to follow the journey of the third cohort of IMASC, visit our blog at imasc-unmasked.squarespace.com. And that's it for this week. Please tune in the coming weeks to follow us as we engage in dialogues about technology, human rights, activism, and many more. Thank you and have a great day.